Hello. Welcome to Blacter. Join me as I examine the best of black artists in my quest to becoming one myself. Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of Blacter. I'm your host, Gabe Moses. I'm probably going to be saying this until the end of time, but a huge thank you to those of you who have been keeping up and supporting this podcast. It really means a lot, and there's much more good stuff to come, so stay tuned. Today's episode is dedicated to Gwendolyn Brooks, the great American poet. Throughout this episode, I'll be talking about how Brooks became one of the most famous black poets of her time, and taking a look at two of her poems that made a huge impact on black culture. So let's get into it. Gwendolyn Elizabeth Brooks was born in June of 1917 in Topeka, Kansas. Her mother, Keziah Wims Brooks, was a schoolteacher, and her father, David Anderson Brooks, was a janitor. Mr. Brooks didn't have enough money to finish school and become a doctor. When she was only 6 weeks old, the Brooks family moved to Chicago, Illinois, where they would live for the rest of their lives. This was due to the Great Migration, poor economic conditions, and racial discrimination. At a young age, Brooks was exposed to literature through her parents and their high expectations for quality performance in her academics. She began writing at an early age, and by the time she was 13, she had published her first poem called Eventide in a children's magazine. Brooks went on to attend 3 different high schools. She attended 1 all-black school and 2 integrated schools. Her educational experiences inspired her to write about the community she lived in. By the time she was 16, Brooks had over 75 published poems in the Chicago Defender newspaper. In 1936, Brooks graduated from Woodrow Wilson Junior College, which is now known as Kennedy King College. Brooks was 19 years old and was already becoming a well-known poet in Chicago. She received praise from poets like Richard Wright and Langston Hughes. She began to work as a secretary to support herself. She also attended poetry workshops to continue to develop her skills even after college. In 1939, Brooks would marry Henry Lowington Blakely Jr., and later they'd have 2 children. Brooks never stopped writing. She was a force to be reckoned with. In 1943, after publishing more poems, she received an award from the Midwestern Writers Conference. This was a huge success for Brooks, and it would earn her more attention, not just in Chicago, but across the country. Bronzeville is a neighborhood on the south side of Chicago. Most of her poems in this book illustrated life in this area, which Brooks knew very well. Her next book would put her work on a higher pedestal. In 1949, Brooks published her second book of poetry called Annie Allen. The poems followed the life of a young black girl growing up in Bronzeville and her journey to adulthood and womanhood. In 1950, Gwendolyn Brooks was awarded the Pulitzer Prize for Poetry for this book. Brooks was the very first African American to win a Pulitzer Prize. Not the first black woman or the first black writer, but the first black person to ever win this award. This was huge. After her success with Annie Allen, Brooks went on to write her first and only novel called Maud Martha. This book was published in 1953. Similar to Annie Allen, the book follows a young black girl as she grows up in a world that wasn't made for her to succeed. By the 60s, Brooks began working as a teacher and instructor for creative writing. She taught at a number of colleges in Chicago, influencing young writers to follow their dreams. But she never stopped writing. Her next book, called The Bean Eaters, would consist of poetry. This book included one of her most popular poems that you probably learned about in middle school or high school, called We Real Cool. This poem was my first introduction to Brooks back in my high school English class. I was impressed with the rhythm and music she used to capture the story. The poem has a certain structure that depicts how it should be read aloud. The word "we" is repeated at the end of each line, but is the first word in each sentence. It is written so when the speaker says "we," there is a pause before the action is stated. Next, I'll be sharing with you an audio clip where Brooks explains and talks about this poem for herself. She is wonderful. Enjoy.
I guess I'd better offer you "We Real Cool." Most young people know me only by that poem. I don't mean that I dislike it, but I would prefer it if the textbook compilers and the anthologists would assume that I've written a few other poems. I wrote it because I was passing by a pool hall in my community one afternoon during school time, and I saw therein a little bunch of boys, I say here in this poem, seven, and they were shooting pool. But instead of asking myself, why aren't they in school, I asked myself, I wonder how they feel about themselves. And just perhaps they might have considered themselves contemptuous of the establishment, or at least they wanted to feel that they were contemptuous of the establishment, might want to thumb their noses at the establishment. And I represented the establishment with the month of June, which is a nice, gentle, non-controversial, enjoyable, pleasant, fragrant month that everybody loves. This poem has been banned here and there because of the word "jazz," which some people have considered a sexual reference. That was not my intention, though I have no objection if it helps anybody. But I was thinking of music. The pool players, seven at the Golden Shovel. We real cool, we left school, we lurk late, we strike straight, we sing sin, we thin gin, we jazz June, we die soon.
We'll be right back after this break. Welcome back to the episode. In 1968, "In the Mecca" became one of the longest poems Brooks had written. It was a narrative about a group of people looking for a child in an apartment building on the south side of Chicago. It instantly became one of her most famous works. It was nominated for the National Book Award for Poetry. In this same year, she was also appointed the Poet Laureate of Illinois. In 1972, Brooks came out with an autobiography called Report from Part One, which consisted of interviews, letters, photographs, and vignettes from her life up to that point. In 1976, she was inducted into the American Academy of Arts and Letters, becoming the first Black woman in this society. In 1985, Brooks was appointed to the Library of Congress as their consultant for poetry, becoming the first Black woman with this achievement. Part two of Brooks's autobiography would be published in 1995. A year later, her husband passed away. In the final years of her life, she would continue to receive awards for her works. And in December of 2000, Gwendolyn Elizabeth Brooks passed away in her Chicago home due to cancer. She was 83 years old. She lived a long and successful life and left behind a profound legacy and a large collection of poems that will always be an important part of American history. For the rest of this episode, I'll be examining one of her lesser-known poems called Primer for Blacks, which was written in 1980. At the end of this episode, Brittany Anukawa will be reciting this poem. She does an amazing job of honoring Brooks's message. Before we hear from Brittany, I would like to take the next few minutes to discuss the major themes of this poem. As I did my research for this episode, I read many of her poems, but this one stuck out to me most. Brooks has a way of emphasizing certain themes and morals in the way she structures her text. If you look at the way this poem was originally written, you'll see certain words and letters capitalized. Brooks does this on purpose to call attention to the words she wants to stand out. She uses repetition beautifully. Primer for Blacks is about the lack of acceptance of black culture both by African Americans and those who view us as lesser beings. As much as Brooks calls out her people, she also wants the world to know that black people come in all different shades and colors, but we are all one and should be treated the same. Throughout the poem, Brooks uses shock value to ring her audience's ears. She is demanding that we acknowledge these names and not to deny the fact that they were given to us by white people. Although the poem takes a serious tone, I hear a sense of unity coming across through Brooks's words. As black people in this world, we have to stand by each other as we live in a country who still doesn't treat us as equals. Therefore, black people have to treat each other as equals and recognize the beauty within us. It's crazy how this poem is still relevant 40 years later, but then again, things haven't changed. Brooks has many more poems that speak to these issues. Here are a list of must-reads that I haven't mentioned. The Mother, Beverly Hills, Chicago, The Crazy Woman, To Be in Love, Winnie, The Good Man, Children of the Poor, and Kitchenette Building. I encourage you to read them. She was an inspiring voice for black women when the rest of the world wouldn't hear them. She still is. Her words speak volumes, and she'll always be one of my favorites. Special thanks to Brittany Anukawa for lending her voice to this episode. With that being said, please enjoy Primer for Blacks by Gwendolyn Brooks.
Blackness is a title, is a preoccupation, is a commitment blacks are to comprehend and in which you are to perceive your glory. The conscious shout of all that is white is, it's great to be white. The conscious shout of the slack in black is, it's great to be white. Thus, all that is white has white strength and yours. The word black has geographic power, pulls everybody in. Blacks here, blacks there, blacks wherever they may be. And remember, you blacks, what they told you. Remember your education. One drop. One drop maketh a brand new black. Oh, mighty drop. And because they have given us kindly so many more of our people, blackness stretches over the land. Blackness, the black of it, the rust red of it, the milk and cream of it, the tan and yellow tan of it, the deep brown, middle brown, high brown of it, the olive and ochre of it. Blackness marches on. The huge, the pungent object of our prime outride is to comprehend, to salute, and to love the fact that we are black, which is our ultimate reality, which is the lone ground from which our meaningful metamorphosis, from which our prosperous staccato group or individual can rise. Self-shriveled blacks, begin with gaunt and marvelous concession. You are our costume and our fundamental bone. All of you, you colored ones, you Negro ones, those of you who proudly cry, I'm half Indian. Those of you who proudly screech, I've got the blood of George Washington in my veins. All of you, you proper blacks, you half blacks, you wish I weren't blacks, Niggeros and Niggerines, you.
Thank you for listening. I hope you enjoyed the episode. You can follow me on Instagram at Gabe J. Moses. Be sure to follow and subscribe to the show wherever you listen to podcasts to get updates on new episodes every Tuesday and Friday. Until next time, I'm Gabe Moses, and Black Artists Matter.